from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJRFM Sports Headlines.
All right, it is Chuck Powell filling in for David Softy Mahler and Dick Fain here today, and we'll start with a few headlines, then explain why this is happening, and then we'll have Hugh Millen on. So that works. Bada-bing, bada-bing. We're off and running here on the program. So welcome in the Mariners getting set to take on the New York Yankees here in a matter of a couple of hours. Logan Gilbert, as we call him in the morning, Slim Pitchens, gets the start against Jameson Taillon going for the New York Yankees. That's your pitching matchup today. By the way, in case you're interested in former Mariner news, Justin Dunn makes his debut for the Cincinnati Reds tonight. So had an injury. He's had it all season long. Of course, part of that big Winker Suarez trade in the offseason. So he hasn't pitched yet for the Major League club. He will tonight for the first time. And they're taking on another former Mariner, Edwin Diaz, the New York Mets, and Edwin's coolest walk-in music in the history of baseball. Interesting matchup there tonight as well. Sue Bird over the weekend playing her final regular season home game. Now, that doesn't mean it's her last game. She still has three regular season games remaining on the road, so the farewell tour will continue, and she'll have postseason games. They've already qualified for that, so she will play again at Climate Pledge, but of course, playing her final regular season game on Sunday. 21-year career. It's not a matter of if she gets a statue eventually here in the city. It's when, and when she does. My favorite Sue Bird is broken face winning a championship, Sue Bird. So I want the statue to reflect that. I want her out there with her Hannibal Lecter mask winning a championship, hoisting a trophy. That's the Sue Bird statue that I want to see. College football, Alabama, number one in the college football poll to start the season. This is the coaches' poll released fresh today. Ohio State 2, Georgia 3, Utah number 8. That's their highest-rated Pac-12 team, and your highest-rated stabbed the Pac-12 and is leaving for the Big Ten-rated team in the country, USC. They are ranked number 15th. And finally, Kevin Durant has told the Brooklyn Nets, if you can't trade me, then I want everybody fired that outranks me. So that's the latest power play move by Kevin Durant as the Nets continue to have a difficulty in the very difficult red tape NBA to try to find a trade partner that makes sense for them. So that saga takes another turn today. All right, there are your headlines. Welcome into the radio program again. My name is Chuck Powell. Usually host the mornings. I did just this morning. So here we are, second show of the day, second shift of the day. But not a record. I didn't even think I was just going to break a record. Jackson Feltz is the only thing familiar here this afternoon.
Hey there.
Hi, Jackson. Ian's like, hey, you're going to break a record. I go, can't possibly be the record. And then he clarified, no, I did 12 hours one time in one day.
Jeez.
That's a lot of radio.
That's a bit much.
Yeah, six is child's play. That's absolutely nothing compared to that. And as I told him, I used to do 6 hours on the reg. So not a big deal. And I'm happy to be here. And I'm happy to be here for David, my friend Dave, more than anything. And so just want to mention this before we bring Hugh aboard. David Softy Mahler's father passed away. And, of course, everybody who listens to this show probably knows that they've been having some health issues there. But on Sunday, he passed away. And so Dave's going to take as much time off as he needs. And so that's why he's not here today. And then Dick was already on vacation. I just want to say I didn't get to know Mr. Mahler all that well. When I was around him, the pride that that man had in that his son turned out to be a celebrity. I mean, that turned out to be one of the best talk show hosts in America was so evident. And so I didn't get a lot of exposure to him, but that was one proud papa. That was one great dad. And that was one great son that he raised. And so we wish Softy and the entire family the best. And as they grieve, we allow them to allow them that. And all we do in return is to try to give our support the best that we can. And that's a little bit of what we're doing here today. So I'm here for my friend Softy because he had a hole in his show. And I want to fill it, and I don't want him to have to worry about it. He calls me jokingly every time I come on, he and Dick both, the franchise. Everybody here knows the franchise is David Softy Mahler. So it's a funny little joke that he likes to tell about me. But we are lucky to have one of the best sports talk show hosts in the country and one of the great dudes ever on our staff and on our team. And he's hurting, so we're hurting. So here I am today to just try and fill this seat while he spends time with the family and they grieve together. So welcome into the show. We'll get through it here the next couple of hours. And we do that by bringing on a familiar voice. It's the great Hugh Millen. You know, talk about top of the line. You know, you're talking about the top analyst out there. And he joins us here this morning, this afternoon. Look at me talking about the morning.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Well, you lie like a rug, but I nicely put and nicely expressed in all truth there. I do want to add that, you know, this is my 24th year of doing radio with Dave, and we've done a fair amount of shows together. And for the listening audience, you know, he is kind of, he's exactly what you think he is. He loves the Seattle sports as much as it comes off. Mm-hmm. I mean, he dies a slow death. That's probably the wrong term today, but, you know, when the teams are struggling, yes, he has ADD, just like you might expect. A couple things that you may not know about Dave. He is an immensely generous guy, one of the most generous people that I've ever known. And for me to list the ways that he's exhibited that and manifested with his time, his money, and he never mentions it. He's exceedingly generous and a guy that cares about the station. You know, I used to say Dan Marino, I really got my respect because of any player that I ever backed up when he was hurt. When Marino was hurt, he was more into the game than any other quarterback I ever saw for an injured player. Hmm. You know, just working the refs, the whole thing. You could see just fury coming over him when things weren't going well. And other guys, as you might imagine, you know, it's almost like, well, if the team doesn't do well without me, maybe that just shows how valuable. I don't know. That's just, you know, mindset. But I've never seen anybody care like Dan Marino, and I'll take that respect for him forever. I think there's a parallel there because Dave cares more about the station, not just his 3 hours, but just the KGR, how it's doing, what have you. And he's done so much for the station, different mm-hmm. people, and, you know, being an engineer behind the scenes, you know, everything that a guy could do, go get coffee, whatever. He's just been an immense team player for that yep. station. And I don't think a lot of people know a couple of those things. I could go on, but we're not eulogizing Dave. Yeah. This is Jack, right? Yeah, and, yeah. You're right. They did have a beautiful relationship in part because I had lunch with Dave a couple times last week, and, you know, Dave doesn't have kids, you know, and so I think that the place that family has for him is more fulfilled through his parents than maybe others. You know, that's just conjecture, but I think it's a reasonable inference. And he's aware that he had an immensely close relationship, so he's struggling. Yep. We're here to help out in any way we can.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll take his baby and look after his baby, his radio show here.
It's his baby.
Yeah.
The station's his baby. Yeah,
that's right. For the next couple of hours. And yeah. And when you're talking about such a great team player and then you're asked, hey, can you be a team player and step in? It's an easy yes. And so yeah, here we are. Yeah. Well here said. We are today. And let's pick your brain. Nothing unfamiliar to the audience that here we sit in the afternoon after 3 o'clock. Hugh Millen is here to tell us what's going on with the Seahawks quarterback situation. And so Drew Lock versus Geno Smith, we've already talked about this. This is the second time Hugh and I have talked Seahawks quarterbacks here in a calendar day. I couldn't wait to get your response to it sounding like Drew Lock outplays Geno Smith Saturday at mock game, and then Sunday at practice, Geno returns to number one spot and Drew returns to number two spot in the quarterback competition. I don't know what the plan is necessarily. I don't know if Saturday was part of the plan, but it does seem rather odd, Hugh, that we've added another chapter to this. Why are you doing your quarterback competition this way?
Well, I'm kind of running out of exasperation for it. You know, I just was apoplectic last week. In fact, for the third time in 24 years, I threw out an F-bomb on live radio. Thankfully, the board op killed it so that we didn't get a $30,000 fine, but I think it went over the internet. I mean, I was just right in that moment. I just can't believe it. And I just think I'm so patently against the decision and the structure and the format of this. I think that, that Carroll, he's trying to do something that almost nobody does. And I think that the reason almost nobody does it is it's been well thought out for years. You know, once they invented a wheel, they stopped inventing. You know, okay, it's we got the right shape. It's round. Let's just go with that. Let's ditch the square wheel. Let's go with the round wheel. And when you
what about a rhombus? How about a rhombus?
Yeah. You know, even the ellipse. You know, that kind of looks like a circle. It's not a circle, right? So, and I feel like years ago, decades ago, the smart people in the league at the time, they said, "Hey, this is actually Occam's razor. The simplest solution. We want to have an equal competition. Ah, let's have equal reps." All right. That was determined years and years ago. And what we discussed this morning, I know. You know, apologies to anybody who may have been listening, but different audience. Instead of just expressing exasperation, I tried to go in this morning, Chuck, with a little bit of the detail of what it's like for a quarterback, you know, and just condensing my thoughts. When you're in the pocket, you generally can't see because, and not as much as you want, because guys are in your face. And if you're quarterbacking well, you're not eyeballing your receivers. We've heard the term stare down your receiver for quarterbacks, right? That's always mentioned as a negative, of course, right?
Yep.
We want to avoid staring down the receiver. Well, what does that imply? That means that when you're in the pocket where your vision is constantly being hindered, and I'm 6'5", and I can speak from experience there, and you don't want to look at the receivers, then you're relying on cohesion that you've got and on each route, how they slow down, how they accelerate, when they look for the ball, what angle they take on different routes. All of these things are reps that Drew Lock is being denied. And for whatever objective is attempting to be fulfilled, it cannot supersede that. There's a very real probability, or at least possibility, that Drew Lock will be starting in September. And there'll be a pivotal time. It might be late in the third quarter where there's an incompletion and Seattle's punting. And if Lock had been given half the reps, like should have been happening over the last 8 days, we'll never get these 8 days back. If he had been getting half the reps, maybe there would have been three or four times. Well, let's just say four verticals. You know, he doesn't know how Tyler's going to run through the seam. And he never had those chances. Now, third quarter of the opening game, he misses Tyler because he just kind of thought Tyler was going to do one thing. And again, he can't stare down and say, "Oh, I wonder where Tyler is," and then wait for him to declare his angle. He has to anticipate his angle. I said four verticals. It could be 50 other concepts. Right. Your corner route, your comeback, your dig, all the routes. There is detail, there is specificity in how you run those routes, and the quarterback needs to see it in live action. To just throw routes on air, you can get some of it, but you can't get all of it. And so, this denying of Lock the opportunity to get reps that could have saved a vital third down. Late third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, maybe, you know, 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and you could lose a ball game because of this strategy. I'm not exaggerating on this. It's just because I know from having been in these competitions, it's not so much the work you get from the offensive line, because if you're doing your job, as I said to you this morning, Chuck, you're not looking down at the offensive line. Yeah, it's nice to work with the starters and see how the center communicates. And there's some aspects I'd say, well, it's good for the, you know, the huddle communication. There's a lot of things you say, well, it's good for the starting quarterback to be with the line that's going to be blocking for him. Yes, that's true. But more important for a quarterback is working with the receivers and the tight ends in with live bullets. To the extent you can be live. I'm talking 11 on 11 where you're, again, your vision is hindered and what have you. And so this is why I think it's so important for Locke to be given these reps for Saturday to have occurred, and then you're back to business as usual on Sunday. I'm out of exasperation. All I can do is try and explain it to our listeners, my opinion, again, opinion about why this is counterproductive to the ultimate goals of the team, why what I'm talking about, I think, supersedes any objective that they may have. We go from here, but it's perplexing to me.
Yeah, and that's from a quarterback's perspective. Is a wide receiver feeling just as adamant about this as a DK or a Tyler saying, hey, I'd like to get on the same page with him too?
Well, okay, so now I'm going, trying to go into the heads of a receiver. I would say my educated guess and my experience, what I sense, they would probably just say, tell me who's going to be starting.
Okay.
And then I want to get on as good a plane with that guy as possible.
Yeah.
You know, presumably they're rooting for whoever is going to be the most productive quarterback, score the most points, and win the most games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in an ideal world, I don't think receivers are taking favorites in this. You know, there's no – Geno Smith has not earned a right to just be given these reps. Just yep. Look at his history. Look at how he played with Seattle. Look at the fact that he was on the street for, 6 weeks, 8 weeks before signing with the Seahawks. This was not some coveted guy that has earned the right to, you know, let's just say like a Matt Ryan. You know, obviously the Aaron Rodgers, the Brady's, the Staffords, all those guys have earned those rights. But let's just say Matt Ryan. If you were at Indianapolis right now, you wouldn't even blink about the idea that, hey, we acquired Matt Ryan, you know, one-time MVP, even though things have kind of skirted on him. You'd say he's done enough that he gets the number one reps. Even if he gets outplayed in a scrimmage, he gets the number one reps. That's not what you have with Geno. There's nothing. Just if you think that Geno earns that, I would challenge you to do this. Spend 25 minutes and do research on his career. And go research. Hell, watch the game tape.
Yeah.
Of the Saints and the Pittsburgh game. His two starts that he lost prior to beating hapless Jacksonville, that kind of resurrected, I guess, how he was viewed. But so he has, I'll just say it firmly, he has done nothing to warrant these type of number one reps. I get backup journeyman quarterbacks bouncing around. Hell, I was one of them. But that's backup. We're talking about not competing for the starting job and inexplicably not competing in the one place that supposedly garners the most competition, the Seattle Seahawks. That somehow, and I don't believe it. I don't accept it. But I know that it's transmitted that somehow we're led to believe that the Seahawks compete more than others. The one program that champions this and talks the most about competing is actually in the most important position in the most important critical time. In 10 years, the one since Russell Wilson's been the quarterback, the one situation that needs the most competition, ironically, is at the place right now that champions competition, but is not delivering on all of the assertions. It's just the irony is just, if it wasn't the Seahawks, I'd be chuckling.
Hmm. Yeah, we got about a minute here. Is there time that, I mean, you said earlier that you could genuinely use this as a reason that Drew Locke's not ready by opening day and might not play as well as he could have played by opening day. So is there still time? I mean, we don't even have a preseason game until Saturday. If we hit the preseason game and by Monday he's getting first team reps, does that wipe that out as a possible excuse or reason that Drew Locke might struggle if he's the opening day quarterback?
It's all multiple shades of gray. That's not a binary answer to me. I would say if tomorrow, hypothetically, Drew Locke was the number one and he got the lion's share of number one reps from now until for the end of camp, A lot of people would say, well, look, they made up for it. Yeah, you can make up for it, but you still didn't get the reps these last eight practices. And you'd say, well, what if he gets 100% of them over the next 8-10 days? Well, that would be a start. That would be a start. What I'm concerned about is when they made this trade, there was overtures that there was real principles at Renton. Let me make this clear to you, Chuck. That I'm not talking about maybe like area scouts. I'm talking about top of the food chain. That there was a real enamoration, is that a word? There was a real infatuation towards Drew Locke based on what he did at Missouri, based on what he did his rookie year, and maybe there were some reasons why he fell off related to COVID and no mini camps, related to the style of head coach, defensive crotchety old guy, et cetera, et cetera. And so because of that, there's a belief at the top of the food chain in Renton that Drew Locke has untapped potential. And so with that, one would think, okay, we need to get as many reps for this young guy as possible. Mm-hmm. And what I say again is there could be a rep, an important down in that opening game where Locke starts again, because they do have this an enamored state with Locke, and he misses a play because he didn't get as many reps as he should have got. That is just such a real possibility. And I've watched Hall of Fame quarterbacks and three additional Pro Bowlers. I've watched guys, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, the need to get on the same page, to get those practice reps. You iron out all of those issues through the practice. And if you don't get reps with that, you're not ironing out issues, and the issues will surface in a game.
Man, fascinating. All right, man. Hey, thank you. Appreciate you joining me here. And you and I will do it again tomorrow morning and talk more exasperation over quarterbacks.
I love it. Good to be with you.
Hugh Millen joining us here. Chuck Powell filling in today for David Softy Mahler and Dick Fain, both out today. When we come back, we'll talk about the Mariners. They're getting set to face the New York Yankees. And is there as big a gap between these two teams as some want you to believe? Maybe not. Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Softy and Dick.
Good afternoon. Filling in for Softy and Dick. It's me. It's Chuck Powell, morning guy. And so, usually if I'm on the show, I'm like one of the other ones here with me, but they're both out here today, so we step in, we fill in here for Dave, who's going to be out for a little while. Again, his father passing away over the weekend, and so he's going to take as much time as he wants / needs, and Fain was already out of town, so if I do anything to screw this up, Jackson, I know you guys got a good thing going here. I'm going to be leaning on you to course correct me. I mean, I know I haven't said phenomenal enough. Is there a show quota for saying that word?
I think that, and for crying out loud, I think we just got to make sure we hit that about three times once an hour. I think that's fair.
I haven't even said for crying out loud.
Well, see, that was two right there. Now we only need one more.
Okay, we're two in. All right, good. One more. the third mention of for crying out loud is brought to you by Taco Time, daily sponsored. And then I have not yet interviewed myself, which is a Fame classic.
Yes, of course.
So should I interview myself real fast? Do I want to interview myself right now? So I'll try to do my best to carry this juggernaut of a show in a fill-in basis, but you're going to have to help me. That's the point.
I'm
That's
always
the
here.
Point of all, yeah. All right. All right, so the Yankees in town tonight to take on the Mariners. The Yankees actually riding a little bit of a losing streak. They have lost five straight games. They have not won since last we played the New York Yankees. So they're struggling a little bit, and I don't know if that's all that big of a surprise to me. I think that what has happened this year is they played way beyond. I mean, they're a good team. Don't get me wrong. They're a good team. But they are not that team that was on that record pace of 120 wins. And I think that the hens have come home to roost for them. Matt Carpenter turning into Babe Ruth this year. I mean, he was somebody that had been cut twice this year by teams. I mean, he couldn't even make the Texas Rangers roster. The Yankees pick him up, and he's basically like leading the American League in OPS. I mean, in this sport, you not only have to construct your team really well in order to be great, and you not only have to make those smart financial and personnel decisions, sometimes it takes a little bit of luck. I mean, do you really think the Houston Astros thought when Jose Altuve came in for a tryout that the 5'3" dude was going to be an MVP of the American League?
No.
No. You know, you catch a little bit of lightning in a bottle at times. The Mariners are going to do it as well if things progress the way that we want them to. If they're going to go all the way, you're probably going to need a little bit of help. Nestor Cortez was a Mariner a couple of years ago, and now he's an all-star pitcher for the Yankees. And before you say, well, there's the Mariners not being
classic
able to
Mariners again.
Not being able to recognize a gem when they see him. Do you know who the Mariners picked Nestor Cortez up from? The Yankees.
Oh,
who had cut him. So here's somebody that nobody wanted after the Mariners released him, and the Yankees were like, well, we like your mustache. You know, come on back. And now he's an all-star. And so they've caught a few breaks, and then they've had a couple of injuries here as of late, and they're going through a rough patch. And I think that some of the holes are getting exposed. I don't think they're as good as the Astros. I don't think they're as good as the Blue Jays. I'd rather face the Yankees in the postseason than the Toronto Blue Jays. And I know that sounds insane, because all you got to do is pull up the standings, and it looks like the Yankees are elite. But they would not worry me in a series as much as Houston would or as much as Toronto would. But then again, we're not chasing down the Yankees. This is a year where, you know, this is the next step in the rebuild. This is going into the year saying the stated goal is we're going to make the playoffs. And here you are right now. Season ends today. You're in the playoffs. And so get the team healthy and, you know, things look good. Especially the schedule lightens up the rest of the way. After this series against the Yankees, it definitely lightens up. And so they're in a terrific position to finish this thing off and get into the playoffs. But we pretty much have no shot of chasing down the Astros and winning the American League West. So we don't spend time, we don't waste time comparing our progress to the Yankees or to the Astros. Maybe to the American League Central champions, because, you know, the Minnesota Twins have fallen back. And now all of a sudden they're in a three-way race to win the American League Central. So don't forget the Twins in this equation of scoreboard watching, because they might fall very soon into the wild card picture versus, because right now they're not on it because they're leading a division. They very well soon could be in this wild card battle as well. But I was having a conversation. I went to the ballpark. First time I'd been there for a while. That's a long story. But I'm sitting down and I'm talking to someone, a colleague. And they are one of the pessimistic colleagues out there that thinks that the team is overachieving now. What we were seeing earlier in the year, that's the team that they're probably closer to resemble. Now, if you've listened to the morning show for 6 seconds, you know that we feel completely differently about that. We have banged the drum for the rebuild. We have banged the drum for the progress being shown during the rebuild. And we banged the drum this year for a playoff appearance. And we also believed, even when things were their bleakest, that it was not over. And we took a lot of heat for it. I'll tell you that, from coworkers, from listeners, from everybody else. You should have seen our text line. So we've been kind of, you know, thinking that this team is good. This team is playoff worthy. They were just playing poorly at the beginning of the year. I told this individual that I'm sitting next to, I'm like, see, I think one of the problems is that when you evaluate just one team in our industry, because we got other sports to follow, so you might be just evaluating the Mariners, and you watch them on a daily basis, and you see the offensive inconsistency. And the next thing you know, you've drawn conclusions of how many holes. And you're right. There are holes in this team. I mean, this thing's not a shoe-in. I wouldn't order your playoff tickets right now. There's no shoe-in that the Mariners are going to make the playoffs. But I think what a lot of people that are given the microphone and have the opportunity to share their opinions about this on a mass basis, they see all the warts on the home team that they watch every day. And they're not necessarily evaluating all the warts on all of the teams that we are competing with. There are seven teams, in essence, vying for three wild card spots, and I'm including the Minnesota Twins in that equation. Seven teams vying for three wild card slots. And I just ran through a course of action where I explained to you that a team that was that is on pace to win well over 100 games has warts. The Mariners aren't the only team with weaknesses. We're not competing with the Yankees. We're competing for a wild card slot. We're not competing with the Astros. Right now, we don't need to be as good as them. We just need to be one of the three best teams of that group of seven. And believe me when I tell you, the Cleveland Guardians, who are closest to us to knocking us out of anybody else, they just cut their opening day cleanup hitter. They just cut him. They just let him go. Jeez. Because he was striking out too much. So they let him go. They DFA'd him. He got picked up by the Cubs today. They're not even in contention. So they've got a very good starting rotation. They've got a tremendous closer. He might be the best in the game. Their lineup is weak. They have Jose Ramirez. That's it. So they're warty. You know, you can spend time evaluating that the Mariners have warts, and I will acknowledge that they have warts, but they're not as warty as Cleveland. You know, Chicago White Sox have a really dangerous lineup. Dangerous, I say. A lot of holes in those bats in Chicago. The starting rotation has not been nearly as good. Lucas Giolito, who you're counting on to be an all-star, has an ERA over 5. Lance Lynn has an ERA, I think, last time I checked, that's over 5. I mean, those two are supposed to be stalwarts for them. So maybe that team's wartier than what they were projected to be. The Baltimore Orioles, they sold at the deadline. That's how confident they are in themselves to make the playoffs, is that they sold their all-star closer and the face of their franchise as it exists today. They sold them at the deadline. They don't even believe that they're a playoff contender. These are the teams we're competing with, even the Toronto Blue Jays and their highly impressive starting lineup. Well, guess what? Bo Bichette's only hitting 250 this year. That's a guy that you're projecting at the beginning of the year to possibly win a batting crown. He's having a substandard season. And then their starting rotation is banged up. They are not healthy in their starting rotation, and they're not as good as the Mariners in their bullpen. So here's the team in Toronto, who I will tell you is going to make the playoffs. I feel more confident Toronto is going to make the playoffs. But if you really wanted to go granular in comparisons, the Mariners have one of the best starting rotations in Major League Baseball with the addition of Luis Castillo. There is no denying, now that we're out of that month of April, that the bullpen has settled in. Eric Swanson has an ERA of 1, for goodness sake. 1! And he's your fourth best reliever? So we have a better bullpen than Toronto. We have a better starting rotation than Toronto. And even though, no, we don't have the best defense, Kevin Shockey, in Major League Baseball, I will acknowledge that. We are a defense that if you hit the ball to us, we are going to catch it. It's a good defense. It's not a weakness, that's for sure. The one weakness that this team has is offensive consistency, because the numbers are up from a year ago, but it's still not a consistently productive offense. But in 2 weeks, when you have Haniger now with his rhythm back, Ty France with his rhythm back after a couple stints with injuries and having to deal with that wrist and forearm for most of the season now, Julio is back. Maybe Winker gets going. I mean, we're tired of waiting on it, and we all are. But maybe Hugh gets going. Hugh just texted me, so I said Hugh. Winker gets going. And now we're talking about a starting lineup that, okay, maybe it's not the strength of the team. Maybe it's not as strong as Toronto's. Maybe it's not as strong as the White Sox at their best. But at least it's escaped the description of weakness. So if you don't have a weakness offensively, and you're putting out as good a starting rotation as any team in the American League, and you're putting out as good a bullpen as any team in the American League, and you're putting out as good a defense as any team in the American League, all you need is that adequate offense, and guess what wins in the playoffs? Pitching and defense. So there's no reason that this offense is so weak and so inconsistent that when it gets its best parts back, that it's going to keep the rest of this roster from winning a basically in-season tournament against six other warty teams who are all vying for three spots. I think we are definitely in position to take one of those three. And I think that we are definitely in position to break this playoff drought. I think that it's going to happen. I say we are one of the best six teams in the American League. I said it at the beginning of the year. I said it even at the worst times of the year. And I'm saying it now with more confidence than I ever have. We don't have a team that on paper is going to win the World Series this year. But we do have a team on paper that even with its warts isn't as warty as many of the other teams that we're competing with for one of those six precious playoff spots. We're going to get there. All right, coming up next, Kevin Durant, his latest trick to try to get out of Brooklyn. Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM.
Hear us anywhere, anytime on Alexa or Google Play at Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM and on the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Softy and Dick.
I'm filling in for David Softy Mahler and Dick Fain. My name is Chuck Powell, normally heard in the mornings, Chuck and Buck, Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM. Both of the fine gentlemen, the host of this radio program, off today. Softy for personal reasons, Dick's out on vacation, so Jackson Feltz is holding my hand here through the next couple of hours. Then we're going to, I guess, replay Mollywop Mondays coming up at 5 o'clock here today. But I got you till 5 o'clock. Corey Brock will be joining us in an hour. And I do want to do testimonials today. Ooh. So, Jackson, if we could get some texts going at 49451, and if you could find a couple where the text guy, texty, isn't just bagging on the fill-in, that'd be wonderful. maybe one that's bagging on the fill-in, but maybe not all of them that bag on the fill-in. You know what I'm saying?
No, I can tell you right now, the text line, we already have more than enough. The text line is like on fire today. Oh, so lots of Seahawks thoughts based on what Hugh Millen was talking about earlier. Lots of Mariner thoughts based on your conversation that last segment. So it's on fire right now.
All right, very good. So we will have enough of that. But I love textimonials, and I want to be a part of it. I want to play your reindeer games. So, you know, I'm going to fill in. I should be able to do the fun stuff.
Of course.
Right? Yeah, that'd be ridiculous. Yeah, if you're going to work the fair, you should be able to ride a ride on occasion.
Of course.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of riding a ride, I just realized something today, Jackson. The worst thing to choke on.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
Okay, I realize I've already started people's minds wandering.
Yes, very, very
I'm
much
talking
so,
about
yes.
food. Talking about food here, people. Wasabi.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a massively painful. You go to the hospital for that? You swallow too much of that?
There was like 0.4 seconds I thought I was going to die.
Oh, no.
For about 48 seconds, I was sure I was going to throw up. But I never even thought about it. If you suck that down the wrong pipe, that the next thing that you know, because you're trying to recover, but the heat, every time you readjust the lump, that the heat redisperses. And so you're like, I can't choke because I'm going to start the whole process all over again. I have to drink and swallow some water here and get this out of my throat. But it turned out as like the worst thing that you could choke on. It was so painful, and the longer you were choking, the more you were re-aggravating the sense of the issue.
Right. So how much water did you end up having to drink to just cure the thing?
I probably got rid of it within 2.5 minutes and a full glass of water. But I still am, I still like feel it in my throat.
Yeah,
I'm
of course.
Still like struggling with it.
Ugh.
So. Yeah, that is, I never even realized, never did the math on that. Don't do that.
That's a hell of a tip.
Yeah.
That's a Ron Burgundy A+ tip. Don't choke on wasabi.
Don't ever do that. Trust me, you do not want to, you don't want to sit there right now like, I don't believe him. and then put a giant lump in your throat and then try to choke yourself with it, because you will regret it.
Yes.
Tears, like giant crocodile human tears dripping from my face as I'm trying to recover from this thing. But it was an awful experience, to say the least. So, don't do that. We got Corey Brock coming up here in a little bit. I know I teased Kevin Durant. I'll just give you the information. Basically, the Nets can't trade him, or at least having a difficulty finding a trading partner, because the NBA trades are really complicated. You know, you got to kind of thread the needle on a lot of red tape, legality things, because of the way the NBA sets up their trades. So to move a contract as large as Kevin Durant's is not the easiest thing to do in the world. And then on top of it, you're like, we're trading away one of the best players in the world. We have to get a tremendous package in return. And a lot of teams just can't satisfy that. So they're unable to find a trading partner that they're happy with. So the national narrative, he might end up being back with Brooklyn. He might not have any choice. Well, Durant took that piece of information, and now he's apparently playing his hand behind the scenes. If I have to stay, then you got to get rid of the front office. And that includes the head coach. So I don't know if it's true, but he's basically said, Marks, the general manager, Steve Nash, the head coach, have to be gone if I'm going to be stuck here. So that's his latest power play. And so what an ugly scenario they've got going on there in Brooklyn. All right, coming back with your headlines, and then we will also talk with Corey Brock. Again, don't choke on wasabi. Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.